once I started, first of all, tapping into my authentic power and giving myself permission to feel, managing my stress, my company doubled in revenue. So since 2019, my company has doubled in revenue. And 1000% that is related to how well me, Ashley, the business owner, is taking care of myself.
You are listening to Ambition Out Loud, the podcast for ambitious women tired of being underestimated and undervalued at work. Together, we're tackling workplace sexism, our own insecurities and self-doubt, and getting practical advice to move our careers forward. I'm your host, Nicole Magoo, and I'm an ambitious woman.
Swing. You should have seen that final show. I'm gonna go down swinging, and long after I am gone, when you hear that melody, you'll still remember me. That's how this girl is gonna carry on.
Nardi is an award-winning podcaster, publicist, speaker, and founder of Nardi Media LLC, a full-service media relations firm that specializes in media placements for authors, thought leaders, entrepreneurs, companies, and more. Ashley served as a network television news producer for nearly a decade, with credits including CBS News, Bloomberg TV, and The Washington Post. She has a passion for helping others grow from zero exposure to household names on the New York Times bestsellers list. In addition to her work in media relations, Ashley has a deep interest in health and wellness and recently earned a certificate in the science of well-being from Yale University. She's a regularly featured expert in media, including on the Emmy award-winning series, The Mother Side, airing on ABC in Washington, D.C. Ashley also happens to be the mother of three, a cherished friend, a mentor in our membership program, Ambition Unboxed Career Cohorts, and author of Authentic Power, Give Yourself Permission to Feel. Ashley, thank you so much for coming on the show today and welcome to Ambition Out Loud.
Yay, Nicole, thank you so much. I'm so excited about our conversation.
Well, today we're going to be talking about your new book and all the ways you have learned to tap into your authentic power. But before we do that, I wanted to give everyone a little bit of a heads up and let them know that we're returning to the world of in-person events. Our kids are both getting vaccinated or in the process of being vaccinated. And that means we get to go do things in the real world again, which is super exciting, and that we have a book signing coming up in Northern Virginia for your new book.
I'm yes. so excited. It's going to be amazing to be in community with people, with you, with our friends, which I can't wait. I can't believe it's happening.
I know. I'm still a little bit in shock myself, but it's going to be awesome. It's like spring out. The weather is beautiful today. And I'm just like, yes, I am ready to emerge from this COVID cocoon we have all been living in.
2 years. It's like 2 years to the day. And it'll be such a great celebration of spring renewal out into the world again. And just to talk about the book too, which I'm so grateful for.
Absolutely. And I believe you're going to do a little bit of a journaling workshop when we get together. Would you want to tell us a little bit about that?
Oh my gosh. Yes. Okay. So journaling is one of the main ways that has helped me really tap into my authentic power, which is what is really like our wisdom that we already have within us. I've learned so much about myself through the power of journaling, but I also recognize that for anyone who hasn't journaled, it's hard to start and it's hard to know where to start. And it's hard to write without editing yourself, because we've been conditioned to write according to what people may read, what people think of us. And the power of journaling and writing for yourself is so freeing and honest and can be transformational if you let it. So I will be conducting several journaling prompts, leading participants through a heart check-in exercise, and having conversation about journaling, which will include conversations about self-love and when we felt most in our power, our authentic power in the past, in the present, in the future. And it'll be so interesting to see what people discover about themselves, because so many people have aha moments when we just take this time to just really tap into yourself and see how you're feeling and where you're at.
Yeah, it sounds like it's going to be a lot of fun. I'm really looking forward to it. And it's really awesome of you to share your time with my community in this way. So thank you so much for doing that. I know time is a really precious commodity, and it's just something I'm super grateful for.
Oh, I feel the same. Feelings are mutual, Nicole.
Well, and for those of you listening, this is going to be a private event for the Ambition Unboxed community. So make sure you head over to the Facebook group to get all the details on when the event will be. And to do that, just search up Ambition Unboxed in the Facebook groups. On that, let's go ahead and jump on into today's interview. So, Ashley, can you start us off by telling us a little bit about your story and what inspired you to write this book?
Absolutely. I mean, it's such a loaded question, because I wrote this book, Authentic Power, Give Yourself Permission to Feel, in the middle of the pandemic. And I've always loved writing. I've been a writer, but I always thought I was going to write a book about book publicity or PR or media relations, journalism. Like, that's what I've trained to do. But I also have this other side of me that has done a lot of healing work in the past several years that has to do with my own personal story of healing from trauma, which included childhood trauma and later in life, a health crisis that was diagnosed as Lyme disease and postpartum depression at the same time. So the reason why I decided to write this book right now, which was in March 2020. Now, remember how we were all feeling in March 2020? We were confused, scared, frightened, angry. I mean, all the fearful, all of these uncomfortable emotions started bubbling up. At least it did for me, and for folks that I talked to, everyone can relate to that. Now, in the past, when I had these uncomfortable feelings bubble up, I had trained myself to bury them. And I did so by ignoring them, by ignoring any feelings. And when you ignore your feelings, that can cause other things to come out. You numb yourself in unhealthy ways. For me, it was through work addiction. It was through alcohol, through people pleasing and lack of boundaries. But this time around in March of 2020, I said, wait, I know what to do now. I've healed myself before, and I'm going to do it again. We are going through an incredibly difficult and transformational time, and we are facing a collective trauma as a world together. And I felt called to share my story of how I healed from my own trauma, with the hope that as we exit out of this collective trauma that is the pandemic, we will have given ourselves permission to feel all of the messy feelings that we felt in these past 2 years. And so that's feelings of grief, sadness, despair, anger, confusion. And this time around, I let myself feel them because I had taught myself to do that several years before when I was going through my own health crisis. And I'm coming out of this pandemic, these 2 years later, renewed, inspired, more educated, and just having tapped into my own authentic power, which is the wisdom within. I'm feeling healthier and more vibrant than ever. And I'm showing up in communities as my true self, and my connections are deeper because of it. So that's the why right now.
Yeah, I feel like the timing of this is so universally perfect because of all the things you just said. We know that mental health crises have been really high throughout the pandemic. We know that there's a lot of people that have been drinking more than they normally would. We know that we've all been stuck in a lot of cases in our houses, you know, not a lot of change in scenery, all of the things, and bearing with it and getting through the pandemic. And not only is it spring and we'll be able to spend more time outside, and like the Omicron variant is starting to finally dissolve a little bit and things are looking up in general, but also it's a great time to have like a spiritual renewal and awakening as we come out of this 2 years of the pandemic. And quite honestly, even if the pandemic doesn't fully end, it is definitely transitioning into a new phase, and we could all use the break and the time to get in touch with ourselves and to figure out, like, how do we start that healing process? Because life is going to keep going, and we can't just continue to trudge through for the next 5 years without pausing and connecting with ourselves and doing all of that healing work you're talking about.
Well, yeah. And here's what happened to me is that I would experience trauma or my health crisis, and I would bury it. And so my fear is that people will just kind of go on like nothing has happened, and they will not have given themselves the permission to process and feel through these emotions that we have been living with and marinating with for the past 2 years. That's really where my story begins. And I don't know if you want me to get into it now. I certainly can. But like, my hope is that people don't end up like I did, because I was an Oscar-worthy actress in burying my real feelings. And it was at a detriment to my health and well-being.
Yeah, absolutely. We can definitely get into it now. You know, I'm going to jump ahead a little bit, but you have said your story, your Oscar-winning actress performance, this is not necessarily any different, right, from what a lot of people say. And actually, on page 22, you talk about a younger version of yourself, the version of yourself that was running from your feelings as being a stereotypical, overachieving, workaholic, partying professional who spent long work days as a producer for CBS News and traveled the country covering breaking news stories. In contrast, I've heard you describe yourself now as someone that prioritizes your emotional, spiritual, and physical health. Why don't we go into your story, what that transformation was like?
Yeah, it's so interesting. Like, even hearing you read those words from the book, I'm like, I was that person. I am no longer that person. And thank God, because I don't think I would have been alive. But yeah, the reason why, I was always on the run. I was on the run from my feelings. And it started when I was a child. And I can tell you exactly when. I was 11 years old. I was raised in a very happy, healthy family, you know, military family. My father was an army colonel. I had a little sister, and I was born in Germany. We lived in California and settled here in DC, where he worked at the Pentagon. And one night at home, after he was tired, and I kissed him goodnight, and the last words we ever said to each other were, "I love you." And moments later, my mom heard him moaning from the bedroom, and she started calling out his name. And I ran to call 911. My 9-year-old sister ran to help my mom give CPR to him. And we found out that, you know, he was suffering from a heart attack. And fortunately, there was nothing that we could do. He died there. You know, whether it was there in the ambulance, we'll never know, but he passed away. And that was the moment of my life that changed everything. I don't expect, and like, when I talk about my trauma, people are always like, I'm never going to have, like, I don't have a trauma like how you've had. I don't want anyone to ever compare traumas. Your trauma could be a fight with your husband or something uncomfortable at work. Please don't compare traumas. This was just that my trauma that changed my trajectory of life. And what happened was, I did not want to deal or face the fact that my dad was gone. I did not want to grieve. I had people trying to help me. I had grief therapists. I had family, loving family members. But 11-year-old Ashley did not want to give herself permission to feel. I think part of the reason is a cultural thing. I was an army colonel's daughter, and I was told that, you know, you need to be strong. You're a Baird. That's my maiden name. You're strong. And that's at no fault to my parents or anyone else. That's just what society is like. You got to be strong. Buck up. We hear that at work, right? Be strong, Nicole. You got this. You're so strong. Actually, the original title of my book was Not So Strong, but I wanted to change it to Authentic Power, because that's what changed everything for me. So I spent the next 20 years of my life burying this trauma. And when I say Oscar-worthy actress, like, you would never know. Like, in high school, I was a very outgoing, vibrant person. I was secretary of my class. I was captain of my dance team. In college, I was editor of the school newspaper. I was president of my sorority. I mean, on paper, I looked like I had my S together. On the inside, though, I was falling apart. I was constantly people-pleasing because I had never paused to address who Ashley was or what am I feeling. And I had never given myself permission to feel. So as a result of that, I had very destructive relationships. I had a destructive relationship with alcohol. When I was at CBS News, I had a very destructive relationship with work. I had an addiction to work. I always wanted to be working. I had a destructive sleep schedule. And you know what? When you live like that, it's eventually going to catch up to you. I thought it wouldn't. And of course, like, you know, when we're in our young 20s, we all think we're invincible. So it wasn't until I was in my early 30s that I was literally slapped over the head with a health crisis that was left undiagnosed for a very long time because it was mystery illnesses. I started losing my vision. I started losing ability to hold my bowels in. I had body aches and pains. It was like I had the flu every day. And I had just delivered a baby too at the same time. And I was diagnosed with postpartum depression first, put in a part-time mental health hospitalization program. And then a couple months later, I was diagnosed with Lyme disease. And I was so far gone. Like I had encephalitis in my brain, which means your brain was swelling. I could barely care for my children, that I had an IV PICC line installed to my heart. And my husband became my nurse and administered IV antibiotics every day for 8 weeks. And those were the quietest, the most excruciating 8 weeks of my life because I was just living in pain. But I also learned how to get quiet and still because my body forced me to. And what I found was that when I started getting quiet and still, all these messy and uncomfortable emotions started bubbling up. And guess what the first one was? It was the grief for my father. And I remember just spending like weeks and months just sobbing and letting it out and just letting these emotions go, crying, sobbing, journaling. I learned how to journal. I did sacred writing. I did all the things. And I slowly started to give myself permission to feel. And I say in my book that like the physical healing of Lyme disease was truly only like 20% of what needed to happen. The 80% was up to me. It was a 100% spiritual journey, awakening, a transformation from within because I needed to give myself permission to feel. And this was the first time in my life since my dad died that I was actually starting to learn how to do that. And that process took about 1 year from, you know, that PICC line to a year later, where I had really learned. I had experts and mentors helping me along the way, but I also did the work. I did the spiritual work. I did the journaling. I did the breath work. I did the meditation. I literally tried and did everything. And in the book, I interview many of the folks who helped me along the way, because of course I'm a journalist. I'm like, I need to show scientific facts and proof and experts and research about this, which is what I think is different from my book and other self-help books, is that I've backed it up with facts. And yeah, that's really my story. And I will say this, I'm so grateful for the gift of Lyme disease and even postpartum depression. And if anyone who's ever gone through that, like, whew, you're not alone. And for sure, I would say absolutely get some help anytime, like a mental health crisis. I didn't even realize I needed help until my sister was like, we're going to go get you some help. We're going to go take you to the ER for your brain. And I was like, at that point, okay, let's go. So, now I'm just a completely different person who allows myself to feel feelings in real time. I'm mindful. I care for myself. I put my oxygen mask on first, and I have dove headfirst into healing, health, wellness, and it's been an incredible journey, and I'm still on it and just honored to be sharing it with you right now where I'm at.
Man, that sounds like such a whirlwind. You know, I listened to your story when you were younger, and it sounds like so many type A driven, high achieving women, right? And that's not to say that every driven or high achieving woman is running from some traumatic experience in their past, but it does just really go to show that when we push ourselves too hard, you know, that burnout is going to happen. The question is, how hard are you going to crash and burn?
Yeah.
And what are you going to do about it when that experience happens? In your case, you definitely, it sounds like, took the time to unpack it and say, enough is enough. I'm not going to keep pushing myself and driving myself like this. Like, let's get to the bottom of this. This is not sustainable. And not only that, but you're sharing all of that knowledge and wisdom that you gained along the way with the rest of us. So lucky us, right?
Yeah. And it was really scary to share. I mean, getting vulnerable is a scary thing to do, but I will say for anyone, once you show up as your authentic self and vulnerable self, your connections with others and with the world and with yourself just deepens. It becomes more honest and more just more me. And I love that about, I just love, that's like what I love about me now is that, yeah, I'm not going to sugarcoat everything is great. I even say in my book, the question, how are you, is such a baseless question because, and we say it, it's societal culture. I say it all the time, but really we're not checking in with people in the way that is beneficial for both parties in terms of connections, because I do consider myself a connection activist. And so I even say, like, maybe instead of saying, how are you today? Like, Nicole, how is your heart doing today? Just to like open up the door for more authentic and vulnerable and honest conversations. I felt like I didn't have permission from society to do that. I know that falls on me because I wasn't given myself permission, but I do feel like, to your point, we are as women just conditioned to buck up, put on that face, be strong, show up in boardrooms, show up as CEOs, show up as businesswomen, and not be honest about how we're feeling, not be vulnerable. And I want to change that. I really want to change like how we're showing up, our honest selves at home, at work, and just to the world, because I feel like there'd be a lot more healing if that happened.
Yeah, I do think that's not just completely on you or on me or any of us. Like, it is definitely a societal thing because I have to imagine, just from my own experiences, that there is a certain group of people that when you say, how is your heart doing today? They don't know how to respond to that question. No. Like, they are conditioned to not be honest and real and admit that they need help.
Well, you're absolutely right. I mean, can you imagine? And like, I don't want to be like a super feminist here, but I am a feminist, showing up to one of your male counterparts and being like, how's your heart doing today, Paul, or whoever, and like getting like stared at and laughed at. But can you imagine if we were honest about that too, at the same time, what would change?
Yeah, completely. Or even just honest with ourselves, right? So many times we're going through things and we are wearing strong, like it's a badge. And somebody asks us, do you need help? And we either don't want to admit we need help. We're not like in tune with ourselves enough to be able to say, yes, this is what I need help with. Or like, we just freeze up. You know, I remember one time I was flying home on a business trip somewhere. I think I was flying home from England at the time. And there was a younger mom with a toddler, infant age, in the seat not too far from me. And a few hours into the flight, like she just had her hands full, right? And the child was so young, she couldn't take a break. And she's on this flight by herself. And I remember at one point just asking her, hey, do you want me to hold the kid for a little bit so you can like go to the bathroom or take a pause? Or we're over the Atlantic Ocean, you know, I'm not going anywhere with her child. But she just looked so terrified that I spoke to her and that I was like suggesting touching her child. And it wasn't anything about her. It's just like, that's how we are conditioned in so many cases to like be insulted when somebody asks us for help, because that's a sign of our weaknesses instead of just human connection and nobody can do this all by themselves, right?
It's so true. And oh my gosh, good for you to just see that. And I also feel sorry for that poor woman based on the conditioning. But yeah, we don't want to show our cards of weakness. I'm still trying to unravel that with myself. And I think as a leader, I still dance around that too, because I have to lead my team, but I want to do it in a way that's honest and vulnerable. And you're right, Nicole, we I've been conditioned not to show our cards of weakness. And that's what got me into trouble, into so much trouble. I almost died. I mean it when I say I almost died. Like there was one day where I was at a doctor's office getting checked out and I started blacking out, and the doctors called an ambulance and took me to the hospital because I had lost complete control of my bowels. It's so gross and sad to admit, but that is how sick I was. I could not function as an adult. And I would say majority of that is because I buried my true essence, my feelings. I didn't give myself permission to feel. And the body remembers, the body keeps score. The body buries trauma. The body buries feelings. That's why when some people get on a yoga mat, they don't know what to do and they don't know why they automatically start crying. It's because it's that release where you're finally giving your body and yourself, your soul, whatever you want to call it, permission to just be. And that's that is really where your authentic power lies. Like when I say authentic power, I mean, this is like as your wisdom. This is the wisdom and the inner knowing that you already have within you. You are the expert of your own life. Every single person is their own expert. They have this beautiful map that they can design on their own if they just give themselves permission to go within and to feel and recognize that these messy and uncomfortable emotions are there for a reason. They're there, we can learn from them, and I have a whole feel framework on how we can process them. But I am so thankful for these emotions because they help me tweak my path to be like, hey, I should look here or look at something a little bit differently and more closely. And I've learned so much by giving myself permission to feel. And that's what I would love to see from more people, more leaders, more employers, and entrepreneurs.
Hey, do you guys remember Marsha from the Accidentally Ambitious episode in season one? Well, her Hideaways has launched and I've got her back to tell you a little bit about it. This is something I believe in so much, I had to go ahead and become a subscriber right away. So Marsha, tell me about how many points I have built up and what I can expect to get out of them.
First off, I wanted to thank you so much for being our first ever package purchaser. And then you are our second subscriber. So thank you so much for supporting my small business and supporting you by subscribing. You have 3,300 points, as you know, but your listeners may not know. With points, you can use them either for a night stay. You can have a chef come and prepare a meal with you. You can actually have them prepare the meal for you. You can have an on-site massage like you did during your first Hideaway. Or you could get a manicure or pedicure in town with one of our approved vendors.
I have to say, right now, Nicole, I'm really excited that I made that decision to become a subscriber because I just know that like with all this time spent with my kids during the pandemic, I cannot wait to get out of my house and have like a little bit of alone mom time to like clear my head and think and yeah, all the things. I can't wait. So I got to book that with you because clearly the whole point of like set it and forget it, self-care staycations, is that I got to take advantage of the points. So that's happening very soon.
Yeah, that's one of the things that I love about the subscription is that even if you can't foresee in the immediate future of doing a Hideaway, you're building every single month, you're getting that automatic debit come out and that gets you 600 points. And then you're building. Do you have anything to offer your listeners, Nicole?
Absolutely. If they use the code AMBITIONOUTLOUD, we'll hook them up with a discount.
Yep. You are our first affiliate and we are so excited to have it where you are rewarding your listeners with something that will really help them unwind, relax, be taken care of, not take care of themselves because we take care of everything for them. That's the whole point of her Hideaways. So thank you so much, Nicole, for being such a raving fan of you. We appreciate you. Thank you.
Absolutely. Do it, ladies. You need it. Let's talk a little bit more about that balance you were just talking about as a leader. So you run your own business. You help make best-selling authors. Your clientele is really starting to reflect that. You're a small business owner, but you're a pretty badass small business owner. Let's be honest about that. How have the lessons in this book helped you become a better leader and a better CEO?
Absolutely. Oh gosh, I love this question. Well, first, when I went through a health crisis, it made me realize that you could look at someone and have no idea what they're faced with personally. I mean, when I had Lyme disease, and anyone who's had Lyme disease can probably relate to this, you look fine, you look healthy, you feel like you're gonna die. And I have so much more compassion for every single person I work with, knowing that if they make a mistake, if something happens, I get curious about it rather than why'd you do it this way and accusatory. It's more like, hey, I've noticed that there've been a couple typos. What's going on? Let's have real talk here. Like, how are you feeling about work? And then it comes into a constructive conversation. I'm overwhelmed, you know, I'm tired. And then that comes into, okay, you know what? let's give you a day off. And that's like sometimes all people need to recharge. So this experience has made me a better leader in that I'm more compassionate about what's going on in people's lives and also curious. If I find that mistakes and errors are getting made, it's not necessarily because they're bad at their job. It could actually be something personal that's happening in their lives. And when you get curious about that, which is what I do now, I usually find that it's they're overwhelmed and they need some time off. And then that happens and they're recharged. Because as you know, people like, I have a lot of type A people on my team. We're go, 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 go. I work in the media business. It's very fast paced. We operate on a sense of urgency. So it's hard to stop sometimes. And so as a leader, I'm sometimes reminding my team that like, hey guys, it's okay to pause. And then the other thing is that I want to lead by example. And I think my book is one example and testament to that. I've also recognized that I can bring in, like we do lunch and learns, like we did a lunch and learn with a life coach just to focus on self-care. Because self-care is so important to an individual and an employee. And I want to make sure that is front and center for my team as well. So they know that my priorities are, yes, we're going to do a great job for our clients, but I also care about your well-being, because if you're not healthy or happy at home, then how are you going to show up to work like that? And I want people to show up in an honest way. So by just giving them permission to have open, we've had open conversations and honesty, and it's just been a beautiful experience. So getting curious, compassion, and leading by example are just a couple of the many examples that I can give on how this journey has made me a better leader.
As you've been going through, you know, I think a lot of people like to talk about how they make wellness and self-care a priority for their team. But then there comes a moment where, just like you said, there's all these deadlines stacking up, because it does involve a trade-off, right? Like there's still only that 1 hour, and how are you going to spend that hour? How did you work through that as a leader, kind of talking yourself through, yes, productivity might take a small hit, but it's going to pay off in the long run?
Yeah. You know, and I've learned that when my team is like, I'm overwhelmed, and they're very good at telling me this because I feel like I'm open about wanting to hear that, then I turn to, okay, let's delegate. We've got other people on the team who maybe might not be so busy. We have publicity assistants who might be able to jump in and help. Where can I jump in and help? And I think that's where the team orientation comes together. And like, that's again, one of our values is just like, we are teamwork. This entire project doesn't fall on you, because we also are conditioned to feel like all responsibility falls on us, right? And I always tell my team, I'm like, you're not doing this alone. I know it feels like this because you're owning this account, but I want you to also know that you can come to me, and if you need me to help pitch or help write, that's my job as a business owner. Like I'm going to get my hands dirty, and I want them to see me doing the work, not just from like the high level visionary, but the writing and the pitching work. It's for the same reason, Tony Hsieh, who unfortunately passed away, I think it was last year, he was the CEO and founder of Zappos. But if you know Zappos, everyone at Zappos has to go through their call center. Even if they're going to be an executive at Zappos, they have to start in the call center to know the customers. So in the same way, like Nardi Media, and I love that example with Zappos, because at Nardi Media, I do not get too far away from the actual work that matters. And as a leader, that's very, very important to me too. Like, yeah, you can be the visionary and you can learn how to delegate, but at the same time, if you need to go jump in, roll your sleeves up and write a pitch and pitch the media, you still, and call a member of the press on the phone, that's our bread and butter. In the same way that those customer call centers are Zappos' like bread and butter, that's really what gets them known and helps build their rapport. It's the same thing. So like being willing to just dive in, help your team, making them know that this is not all on you. Like, yes, you own this, but you are owning this with a team behind you. And that gives them reassurance and actually like really helps with morale too.
I completely agree. I'm also a huge fan of like basically what you're describing as cross-training, making sure that multiple people within the team know how to do the function so you can fill in for each other. I find that sometimes where you see leaders get hung up is trying to know how to divide their time or how to balance things between the high level visionary strategy stuff and staying close to the work. What is some of your guidance in that area between balancing those two very different functions at
times? Oh my gosh. Yeah. So I've actually, even recently, I've been really interested. I've been very interested in how I spend my time and productivity. And I'm in the process right now of actually writing down what I do every single day, every minute of the day to see where I'm spending my time. And that's a method. That's not an Ashley Bernardi method. That's like any productivity expert will first ask you to write down, what are you doing? How are you spending your time? And you'd actually be surprised where you're spending your time. And then where do you want to be spending your time? Like maybe you want to be dedicating several hours a week to visionary work, X hours a week to writing, but first you need to do an audit of where you're actually spending your time. And then I think something else that's been very helpful for me as a business leader is to plan my weeks in advance. I did this a lot during the pandemic where I'd be like, oh my God, I don't want to look at my calendar today because it's going to give me anxiety. I have so many calls. But I learned that that's not the right way to work as a leader. Nothing's going to get done. So now I sit with my assistant and we look at my calendar for the following week and the week after that. So I will go and look 2 weeks ahead and we make sure of a couple of things. Am I getting my creative time? Am I getting time to lead the team? Am I getting time to check emails? And then where do I have calls? I can't have too many back-to-back calls because I know energetically, it's going to just take it a lot out of me. There was a point where I was on 8 calls a day and during the pandemic when everybody suddenly moved to Zoom, and then I'd have to go and spend time with the kids and I was completely exhausted. So I couldn't live like that. So I had to do this also in addition to an audit of where I'm spending my time. I had to do an energetic audit of what is draining me energetically. And I needed to get to a point where I felt energetically fulfilled at the end of the day, but also had the energy to transition to my role as a mom. So I would say looking at your calendar for the following week in advance. So like every Friday I sit down and you can make a ritual of it. Like sit down, go to a fun coffee shop and look at your calendar the week ahead and plan things out and like look for things that might come up and make sure that you have on your to-do list everything that you need to do for that week based on what your calendar looks like. And then look at the following week too. And so I've been learning a lot about that. I've been getting help from productivity experts. I would recommend the Life Hack Method or the Life Hack Tribe. If anyone has ever heard of that, highly recommend it. That's the program that I'm in right now. Definitely recommend that. Looking at your calendar and doing an audit of your time would be my first two recommendations.
That's a great recommendation. Do you also plan in advance with your team to like help them foresee upcoming deadlines and some of that kind of
stuff?
Oh,
absolutely. I mean, we, you know, as a team, so I have a managing director who is talking to the lead publicist every week. And then we do team calls once a month. And then we also have internal calls. So I have Slack. I mean, team communication is so important. And I always tell that, like, sometimes it can be hard with, for me as the CEO to get a hold of me, but we do office hours. So I'm like, if you need me, I'm going to be on office hours on Monday. Or if you can't get me, get to my number two, Caroline. So we have a whole system in place because team communication is so, so important. Every week, I'm talking to everyone every single week, Slack, office hours, calls, emails, you name it. It's so important to have that correspondence with your team.
All of this is sort of bringing up why CEOs and executive leaders routinely list stress management as a key practice to maintain high performance, right? On page 106, you say that you believe that the stress you're feeling as a perfectionist, a people pleaser, you know, a highly sensitive person, an overachiever is what resulted, as you've already described, in your Lyme disease and all those debilitating symptoms, physical symptoms. You also mentioned, which I was not surprised, but also surprised to see it written in black and white, that the American Medical Association has said that stress is the number one cause of more than 60% of all human illness and disease. That is a big number. Mm-hmm. So how are you incorporating stress management into your life now? And is it helping?
Oh my gosh. I could talk for hours about this. First, I'm going to say this, that is a number we should be paying attention to. I talk to people who are like, I have this health ailment, this health ailment, this health ailment. Like my own mom is one of them. Sorry, mom. And it comes down to stress. So I used to live in that fight or flight mode, which is like when your nervous system, it's like a primal thing. When your nervous system is in fight or flight, your cortisol levels rise. I mean, this is science, right? And you have stress in your body, and that causes inflammation in your body. That inflammation causes physical ailments in your body. I didn't know this until I actually discovered that. So when I learned this as a journalist, I was like, well, then I absolutely need to find ways to reduce stress. So for me, in the early days, it looked like limiting my work hours because I needed to energetically spend time at work, but also spend time doing nothing and healing and spend time with my family. Now it's a very healthy balance. And what I found are a couple of things. Like one, give yourself little breaks in the middle of the day. So if you're anything like me, which is a type A, wanting to go, 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 I love my job so much. I could sit down at 7 a.m. and if I didn't have a distraction, if I didn't have like a ding on my phone or something else or my stomach to tell me that I was hungry, I could sit here and work until 6 p.m. and not blink and not, and just feel like time just passed by. I get in my flow. And that's actually very unhealthy, even though it feels very fun and fulfilling. You absolutely must take breaks. So for me, I will set reminders on my phone, or I'll say, okay, I'm going to check my email for 20 minutes. I say, hey Siri, set alarm for 20 minutes. It's my reminder to take breaks. Look, 6:02 p.m. My alarm is now set. But just as an example, so taking breaks, something else to manage stress too, and I talk about this a lot in my book, is I learned how to meditate. And everyone roll your eyes. Oh God, meditation. Cause I used to do that too. When I first tried to meditate, I could get through 10 seconds of a meditation and all of my thoughts would just go whoosh, flooding in. And I was like, oh, I hate this. When I first tried yoga, oh, I hate this, because you're trying to get your mind quiet and still and listen to everything, but you have all this noise on top. But meditation is very much like running or learning how to ride a bike. The more you do it, the longer you can do it, and the more clear-headed you become. And so I meditate every morning. I meditate every night before I go to bed. You can find guided meditations. There's an app called Insight Timer. It's my favorite app. I'll sometimes do meditations in the middle of the day. Sometimes also, if I've had a very busy morning and I know that you know, it's going to be a busy afternoon with the kids, I see 30 minutes on my calendar. I take a nap. I listen to a yoga nidra. I set an alarm in the middle of the day and I give myself permission to do that. So those are just a couple of things in terms of stress management that I would recommend. I could go on forever about this, but I'll stop myself there.
And I assume you find that this has been a net positive, these changes.
Oh my gosh. So here's what I'm going to tell you what happened. Once I started, first of all, tapping into my authentic power and giving myself permission to feel, managing my stress, my company doubled in revenue. So since 2019, my company has doubled in revenue. And 1000% that is related to how well me, Ashley, the business owner, is taking care of myself. I'm fulfilling myself. I'm fulfilling my creativity. I'm watching my calendar to make sure everything that's on my calendar is worth my ROI and worth my energy to do. And I don't work myself to death anymore. I'm very mindful about it. I work hard and I work smart. And when I'm done with work, I turn off work and I go spend time with my family, or I go outside. And that's another thing for stress management. Get outside. Even if like dead of winter, I'm a crazy person. I like to run. I would run in 20 degrees weather. I'm not telling you, you need to do that, but get outside, take one of your meetings outside. If it's a Zoom call, be like, hey guys, I'm taking this meeting while I'm walking, because walking makes me more creative. I take a majority of my internal team calls on audio while I walk around the local lake, because I'm so much more creative when I walk. So yeah, I mean, bottom line, company is double the health than it was 2 years ago. And it's because my health is better. The healthier I feel, the better the company does. So this just goes down to being the business owner. You got to take care of yourself first if your company is going to thrive.
Well, that's a pretty strong reason right there for people to pay attention.
Yes, that pay attention to that stress number. That is it. Once you learn how to alleviate stress in your life, everything will change, including the way you bring money in and the amount of money you bring into.
So all of this is really great for those that are like at the top levels within leadership in a lot of cases, or small business owners, people that have more control over setting their own schedule. Take us back to that demanding TV producer job. How would you implement some of these things? And real talk, you know, I know you value sleep now. Could you imagine, or how do you imagine, for people that are in more corporate or traditional workplace settings where they don't have as much control over their schedule, how do you fit in 8 hours of sleep a night? How do you do some of these things that you're suggesting that we do?
Well, the first thing I will tell you are boundaries. We're not taught boundaries in life. So anytime someone would ask me something, I would say, yes, 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 yes. Ashley, show up to the newsroom. You're going to get on a flight to Orlando. There's been a shooting. Boom. Okay. Yes, yes, yes. Hadn't even packed a bag. Or Ashley, there's this breaking piece. I know you've been at work for 10 hours today. Can you stay another 5 and sleep on the couch? And then, and yes, 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 yes. But you got to put boundaries in place. And I learned the power of saying no. Now I've learned it the hard way once I had a health crisis and I couldn't say yes to anything because I was so sick. Now I have very firm boundaries. That Ashley, that 23-year-old Ashley who was that people pleasing workaholic in New York City. Yeah, I had a lot of fun doing my job. I loved it. But part of the reason why I loved it and said yes to everything because I was such a people pleaser. I wanted to be liked. I wanted people to like me. I wanted people to think I was the best. I was so concerned about everyone's opinion of me that I did everything possible to make everyone around me happy except myself. And if I were to go back to that girl now, knowing what I know now, you know, in hindsight, I would say no to certain assignments and say, I can't, that's not going to happen. And I'm not going to compromise on this and be firmer in my boundaries. Even if that meant I was in a corporate job, because one, if they were going to fire me because I said no to an assignment because I'd already been at work for 12 hours a day, that was not the job for me. That's actually not the job for anyone. And so I would be gentle and kind to myself and also give myself permission to put some better boundaries in place.
I love this. I also think that anecdotally, this I've seen a few articles, but mostly this is anecdotally. I think the younger generations are starting to take this advice to heart and actually implement it. You know, yes. I'm hearing stories more and more of, it doesn't matter what the salary is. People don't want the jobs. If it's pushing too hard, like people have been raised in a culture where they hear the word boundary. Like, I didn't know what a boundary was until well into my 30s, but people are coming into the workplace now already knowing some of this lingo and how to talk about these things. And I think this is just going to start to get a cultural tide behind it. Naturally, to some extent.
You are so right. I mean, there are even studies done that show that this up and coming generation, you're right. They don't necessarily care about the money. It's not about the money. It's about the work-life integration, the balance, the company culture, the company values. That's what the younger generation is valuing more than the good salary or the great 401k and the health benefits. And I think that we are in this transformational awakening, realizing that. I've even seen that in the past couple of years, you know, when I started like as a freelancer and watching more and more women start their own jobs. That's why I left the workplace anyway, because there was no flexibility. I mean, I left corporate culture. You know, I had no flexibility to work from home when I worked at a PR firm in 2013. And I was like, there's no point for me to commute an hour and a half to work every day and then an hour and a half back and show up in the office when the boss wasn't showing up. And I had a baby at home and I could do the job at home. So I left. So companies need to pay attention to the needs of employees because my work is not a trade-off for my family. And I quit because I wanted to be home with my family more. And now I don't have a commute. I never will. I work from home. And it's amazing because the kids get off the bus stop and I get to be there every single freaking day to give them a hug and ask them how their day was. That is my why. That is why I'm doing what I'm doing.
I think this also brings up another, again, I'm going with my anecdotal perception here, but another misconception, which is that, you know, there was a period where women were leaving the workforce and becoming stay-at-home moms because they didn't know how else to do it. And there was a perception that women's ambition dropped off at a point. Would you consider yourself any less ambitious now than you were when you were a hard-driving 20-year-old?
I am so much more ambitious now. I would say I've always been an ambitious person, But I'm more ambitious now, and that as a business owner, I've learned to take more risks. And I love taking risks. And I've also embraced failure too, knowing that we're all going to fail at some point. And we're all going to sometimes try out new services, experiment with new things, and it's not going to work and it's not going to stick. And I don't beat myself up over it. I'm like, you know what? Now I know not to do that. And so, yes, I'm more ambitious because I find that if you're not taking risks and if you're not failing, you're not growing. And I've learned that in the past 7 years that I've been a business owner. And that's what I love about it. I love the creativity of risk-taking and failing and knowing that while you're failing, you're still growing at the same time.
Yeah, I completely agree. And I think we are continuing to see more women like you. And honestly, I was in the same spot. I'm back in a day job now, but I left for similar reasons. Let's put it that way. When I first paused and went full-time as an entrepreneur. And I think what we're seeing now is women leaving because they feel like they're not getting the flexibility you said, right? They feel in some ways constrained. Their creativity is being boxed in. Their ability to achieve within their role is being boxed in. And now there are options where you can go out and start your own business. And they're seeing other women do it. And they no longer feel like the only choices are work in this very traditional corporate career or become a full-time stay-at-home mom. There's like a blend of options now. And so I think you're absolutely right. If leaders aren't paying attention to the things that their employees are telling them, there's lots of other paths for women out there nowadays to pursue.
Oh, yeah. And I mean, that's why we've seen the great resignation. Over 2 million women have quit their jobs in the past year. Several of my friends, their corporate jobs. I mean, these are highly educated women, MBAs and more, who quit because they're either having some sort of awakening or the company is not listening to their needs for flexibility or what have you. And they're saying, there's got to be a better way. They're fed up, and companies need to be paying attention to that. I certainly am, at least, because retention is so important. When I have someone on my team, my hope and dream is to have them for the long run. And I think that there's a lot of work that needs to be done for women. And you know what? Good for any women that is able to quit, because I know not all women are able to financially do that. But I also want to say, for the women who are wanting to quit but can't financially do this, you can start a side hustle while you are still working. It is possible to do. There are so many success stories. And I would highly recommend looking into it because you'd be surprised. It's very scary to do, but there are free resources out there like SCORE. That's what I did, which is the Small Business Association's. It's free, you know, business coaching. Start there if you're not sure where to start. Go have a conversation with a business coach. It's free. Tell them what your idea is. They'll help you put a business plan together and see what happens. You'd be surprised. I surprised myself. I did it and look where I am now, 7 years later.
Yeah, I definitely echo that. I also just want to put a plug in for take it to HR, try to start an affinity group or a women's interest group or something and get what you want out of the culture. You know, sometimes it does take being that inside voice within an organization as well. And if you're feeling that way, there's a good chance your colleagues are also feeling that way. And if you could figure out who those people are, everyone's voices are stronger when they come up together.
So true. It is so true. I mean, it reminds me, you know, in March of 2020, when the whole Black Lives Matter movement happened, and my team and I were like, what can we do? And we are book publicists, and we were like, let's start a book club. And then we partnered with you and had these incredible conversations for a full year. You can ignite change when you take it to HR. If you're a business leader, you can start it yourself. I love that. I think it's beautiful. I'm glad you brought that up.
Absolutely. This has been such a great conversation. Okay, we're going to wrap it up with two questions. One thing I reflected on as I was reviewing your book is that a lot of these suggestions, I think the 20-year-old version of myself would have found a lot of this emotional healing, spiritual healing, wellness. I think a younger version of me would have felt this was a lot of woo and maybe not been super interested in it. But I'm curious, one, would the 20-year-old version of Ashley also have felt that way? And two, how do we get the younger women that we're mentoring to sort of connect with some of these messages so that they don't have to go through the same level of like, emergency crisis and burnout that we did to get to these points.
I love that. So I'm going to answer your first question first. How do we get the message? By having these types of conversations and showing up and being examples, but we have to be willing to talk about it. And I think that's where like the previous generation didn't talk about their feelings. And I want to break that cycle and break that barrier. And my hope is that this younger generation of women that are coming up don't end up like me. I don't want you to go through your 20s and early 30s, like killing yourself, overworking yourself and people pleasing and only to end up in a hospital. And I'm a storyteller by nature as a journalist and a public relations entrepreneur. So telling the story. So showing up and doing what we're doing right now is a way to hopefully reach that generation. Would the 20 something year old Ashley read this book? I would scoff at the idea of reading this book. And here's why. I'm going to say something. I had many opportunities throughout my life of people trying to help me, going back to when I was 11 years old, getting the best grief therapist in the area and still not wanting that help. You're not going to be ready until you're ready, and you'll know when you're ready. And it might take that health crisis, maybe not, I hope it doesn't, but it might take that difficult time to be ready to embrace a more emotional healing. I will say this. If you do read my book and you're like, whoa, that's too woo for me, put it down, but then come back to it. Because when I first started getting into the like woo or, you know, emotional, spiritual healing, some books that I read were too much for me. And I would even step away and say, whoo, that was a lot. But then I would allow myself to come back to it and give it a second chance. And I did this actually a lot while I was in my healing process. And when you come into it again with just a little bit more of a different perspective, and be curious about it. I mean, kind of look at it as if it's from a journalist's eye, then you might be surprised by what you learn about yourself. So yeah, I would love to have given myself permission to read this book. I mean, in all honesty, this is the book that I wish I had had when I was going through my health crisis in my 30s. But what I have found is that it was only me that was going to give myself the wake-up call. It wasn't going to be one single book or anything else. But I will say that my message is to like go into all of these books about self-healing, emotional healing, spiritual healing with an open mind. And if it doesn't resonate with you the first time, come back to it. I guarantee you, you'll see it with a different set of eyes.
I think that is great advice. I would definitely echo that. I definitely think that reflects how I have learned to take in process information over the years that maybe the 20-year-old version of myself also would have been a little too close-minded to even consider at different times, right? So
yeah, it's like, you know, you're telling your teens or tweens to like do something and they don't want to listen to you. You're kind of still in that mindset when you're in your early 20s anyway. So that's why I always say, like, you're going to learn it on your own and when you're ready.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, so I have a listener question that came in through Instagram. We've already talked about the fact that you have a really successful business you're running. You're clearly maintaining some work-life boundaries that the rest of us are probably considering life goals at this point. You wrote the book during the pandemic when all of our lives were already completely thrown off track and the demands placed on women had increased tenfold in a lot of cases, with kids, you know, schooling at home and all of the extra dishes and laundry and everything from everyone being in our houses 24/7. You're a busy working mom like the rest of us. How did you find time to write a book?
That's a great question. In little pockets, through journaling. Oh gosh, they're actually, it's a really good question. A lot of different ways. People think that when you write a book, you actually have to sit down at a computer. But for me, that wasn't the case. I was like, hello, I love, like, part of my sanity during the pandemic was taking walks around my local lake, which is about 5 miles. And I would dictate a lot of what I wanted to write and record it on my audio. And then I would come back and text it out. And that is how I piecemeal the book together. So through a lot of journaling, through a lot of audio text and writing and waking up sometimes early in the morning, but also I think it's a mindset thing too. Like, this was a very therapeutic process for me to write and go through. So I had this drive to write because I felt like I was healing myself while I was writing. And so I had that, it was a mindset thing. thing. And I made time for it. You make time for the things that you want to make time for. Did that mean I had a messier house and the dishes weren't done? Absolutely. And then we all did during the pandemic. But for me, it was a form of self-healing and self-care that was a priority for me. And I made sure it was a priority. And I think the reason I did is because I'd been through this whole healing journey, learning that if I didn't put my oxygen mask on first, that nothing was going to run, nothing was going to run well.
I love that answer so much. I like to say progress is what happens in the margins. People think I got to have like 2 days to sit down and do this huge chunk of time blocked out and knock it all out. And like, honestly, most goals, you make progress in 15 minutes here, 30 minutes there, 45 minutes here. And like your answer perfectly reflects that in so many ways.
That's exactly what happened. It was little increments, some days, 5 minutes, 10 minutes, 30 minutes, but I never sat down for 8 hours at all during the pandemic to write this book. There is no possible way that would have happened.
Yes. It's not like, I'm sure you didn't have fantasies at times about like going and checking into a log cabin and writing for a week. Everyone did during the pandemic, but you didn't have that opportunity is what I'm hearing, and that you managed to make the book happen anyway. So
yeah, I did not have that luxury. And the other layer that complicated things, and I think a lot of people can relate to this, is that, you know, my husband, he was not home at all. He went to work, continued to go to work, physically in work. He's a builder. They never shut down construction in DC. And so it was me and journaling and kids for several months. And I truly believe that this book helped keep me sane because it helped me process my feelings in real time, which is what I'm hopefully teaching others to do too.
Absolutely. Ashley, thank you so much again for coming on and sharing all of your wisdom and your very deep and personal lessons that you've learned along the way with all of us and our community today. I know our listeners are going to want to learn more about you. We only really skimmed on your story in a lot of cases. The conversation was just so great. It just kept going. So where can my listeners connect with you when they want to learn more?
Thank you. And it was such a good conversation, Nicole. You're an incredible interviewer. So to learn more, you can visit my personal website, Ashley, A-S-H-L-E-Y, Bernardi, Bernardi.com. My book is Authentic Power, Give Yourself Permission to Feel. And you can also visit my website for Nardi Media, which is Nardi Media, Media.com. And you can learn about all what I do during the day.
Thank you, Ashley. And also don't forget, if you want to find out more about the book signing that Ashley and I are going to be doing, head over to the Facebook group and we will get you the information on that there. And we'll put all of that information on how to connect with Ashley in the show notes. Thank you so much, Ashley.
Thank you, Nicole. You're amazing.
That's our episode for today. Thank you so much for spending the time with us. If you found today's episode helpful, please pull out your phone and share the link with one or two friends that would also benefit from hearing it. If you really loved it, please leave a review in iTunes to help others find the podcast. Itching to meet other ambitious women? Connect with members of our community online at the Ambition Unboxed Facebook group. Ambition Out Loud is produced by Cultivate Inc. LLC. Today's music is by Steve Rice Music. Until next time, remember, your ambition is a beautiful thing.
I'm gonna go down swinging. There'll be a tale to tell. Like a boxer in the ring, I'll give my everything until I hear that final bell. Well, I'm gonna go down swinging, whether I'm right or wrong, I know.